News with Nick, a recording for February 25th, 2024. Back for the second show of 2024. Head on over to the website, newswithnick.com. That definitely needs a new banner. Send me an AI-generated photo of myself and doing news. And then that will be the new banner photo. Because we don't do graphic design anymore. I mean, before we used to send it to Fiverr. Hey, Fiverr, can I please have some graphic design done? And they'd be like, oh, cool. Yeah, I'm from Afghanistan. Please give me $5 because that will basically pay my rent for the next 2 months. And I'll do some art for you. Now you don't even need to do that. Now you just ask a computer to do it. And it's AI and it's out. And, you know, we're in the end times, but that's okay. We're just going to continue pretending that we're important, like pretend that we're an important species for as long as we can, because what else are we going to do, right? Just give up, just be like, well, I guess the robots win, just might as well lay down and have them destroy us. No, we're just going to do our best. Head on over to the website, newswithnick.com, if you want to watch the unedited video version of the show, where you can see all the times I need to stop and check the sound and stuff. All right, what do we have to get into today? Let's see, anything else new in my life? Not particularly. I haven't even had any that many funny stories. Mostly my day is spent going to work, but I don't really go to work. I just work, you know, you just get up and go, okay, I'm on the computer now. I'm at work. Then you go to the store, and the stores here are a little different than I'm used to. There are normally people asking for money, right? This is just a guy wheeling up and down the... He's in his cart, scooter, and he's wheeling up and down the aisles of the grocery store, but he's got nothing in his little basket. So he's like, hey, I need $42. And he pulls out this piece of paper. It's like, I don't know what it is. I didn't read it in detail. I'm like, oh, hey, let me take a scan of this. No, I assume it was like a bill from his hotel or whatever, where he's been put up because his house burned down. Some sad story. He's like, I need $42. And I'm like, how can I help you? He's like, well, I need some way to get $42. I'm like, well, I don't have any cash on me. He's like, okay, I'll take gift card. Sad. I wish I could give everyone $42, but then there would be I'd run out of time. There'd be an infinite line of people asking for $42 from me. I'm a nice person, but I don't know. What am I supposed to do? Just give every person $42? I one time saw a guy outside taking a donation. And he was taking it on his phone, like using Square or Venmo or something. And then after he was done, he gave the people who had given him money, like, a customer survey, like a satisfaction survey, kind of like how you'd interact with a company and they'd be like, oh, how would you rate your experience? Would you recommend this to someone else? Except I heard him say to these people, hey, what made you stop and give me money? I'm like, wow, he's doing a customer survey on the people who just gave him some money. All right, let's get into some various news stories throughout the week. I'm not really going to talk about the biggest news of the week, which is, okay, so there's, I guess I'm going to mention it, right? Like, I don't really know much about it. Apparently, embryos are humans now, and there was a non-binary who hit their head, and now everyone in Oklahoma's real mad about that. But on to the more fun stories.
Tonight, the Austin Marathon took over the streets of our state's capital on Sunday, and one runner in the half marathon stood out from the rest.
A Texas man broke a Guinness World Record when he finished a half marathon with a time of 1 hour, 21 minutes, 39 seconds while dribbling a basketball. That's the end of that story. When I saw this headline, I was like, ooh, wonder how fast he ran it. Could I run a marathon fast enough while dribbling a basketball to become the Guinness World Record holder? I can't even run a half marathon in 1 hour, 21 minutes. Forget the basketball part. When I was a kid, I used to dribble a basketball as much as I could. I would go for like an hour. I was like, I wonder how long I can go. I would just bounce the ball. That's why they, that's why some people thought I should have been put into the special program. When I was first handed a basketball as a child at, I don't know, gym class in elementary school, something like that. They're like, hey, okay, here's the ball. You need to dribble now. I was like, I need to dribble? Like, yeah, dribble the ball, dribble. I'm like, okay. It's kind of weird to be drooling on the court, but fine, if you say so, I'll dribble. Oh, dear. They don't teach us. They don't always tell you what they mean these times. It's like the time I went out as a kid in soccer. I was playing soccer. I was like six, right, playing soccer. And I come out with the coach for the coin toss for the soccer match. And the coach says, all right, you have to call the flip, call the coin. I was like, what does that mean, call the coin? He says, say heads or tails. And I said, heads or tails. Oh, boy. And the coach said, oh, just say heads. And I said, okay, heads. That counted as me calling the coin flip. I don't even remember if we won or lost. Intuitive Machines lands on the moon in a nail-biting descent of private Odysseus lander, a first for the U.S. since 1972. Odysseus is a robotic lander built by the Houston-based company Intuitive Machines. It touched down near the lunar South Pole this evening on February 22nd. A landmark moment for space exploration. No private spacecraft has ever soft-landed on the moon before, and an American vehicle hadn't hit the gray dirt softly since NASA's Apollo 17 lander did it in December of 1972. Odysseus has taken the moon, NASA Administrator Bill Nelson said in a video message the agency aired just after confirmation of a successful touchdown. This feat is a giant leap forward for all of humanity. Stay tuned.
And so has the rest of the lunar lander. The CEO of Intuitive Machines made the surprise announcement tonight, just 24 hours after landing on the moon.
Okay, I missed the first thing that she said, but you're going to get to it shortly. Now you're in suspense as to what she's about to say. So I don't know much about this, but the lunar lander has, it's a private company. They launched a spacecraft and then it landed on the moon. I don't know what it was supposed to do. I assume touch dirt and stuff, like, ooh, moon dirt. But here's a news story of the status of the lunar lander.
News 6's Troy Campbell is tracking the latest updates now. And Troy, this is so disappointing. How did this happen?
Well, the company says it appears that the lander neither tipped on its side during or shortly after landing. The CEO used this model to show it laying over what they think might be a rock. Now, they say one of the legs may have gotten stuck in a hill or have slammed in to, quite frankly, anything.
So it landed, but it flipped over as it landed, or right after it landed. I guess the wind got it, probably.
If you're coming down at 6 miles an hour, is what we think, and moving 2 miles an hour, and you catch a foot, we might have fractured that landing gear and tipped over gently.
Intuitive Machines saying on Friday, the lunar lander Odysseus landed slightly harder and faster than originally planned, before tipping sideways on the lunar surface.
I can't tell you for sure. It'd be good to see the health of the landing gear and see how that all looks. And so it'll be a few days before we get all of that put together and reconstructed.
Odysseus touched down on the surface of the moon Thursday after an 8-day journey, circling the moon 2.5 times, traveling a total of 600,000 miles.
It was quite amazing to see him in work, real space cowboys. And, we worked through all the difficulties. If you think back from Apollo days, there wasn't one mission that went absolutely perfectly. So you have to be adaptable.
Is this real?
You have to be innovative, and you have to persevere.
How could they even land on the moon?
The company says the craft's sideways position is blocking the antennas and solar panels needed to stay operational.
Uh-oh.
They expect Odysseus will officially lose power and go dark in about a week.
No!
To look at the moon every night now and know that we have new hardware there that we had a hand in building in our lifetime, something I couldn't say before.
So it was supposed to land, I assume, and then keep running because it had solar panels, but it flipped over, and now the solar panels are covered, and it's slowly suffocating on the moon going, need sun. Need sun. Let's skip ahead in the video.
It really was a magical, magical day.
NASA says its onboard positioning software helped guide the lander to the lunar surface.
Despite the many challenges with the mission, NASA says it was a success.
To have a private company actually design a spacecraft, develop a mission, buy a rocket, and fly all the way to the moon and soft land on the surface of the moon.
What the
heck? Not just in an area where we...
Can you even do anything, like, once you've launched it and given it instructions to try to land? Because isn't the moon, like, 2 light seconds away? Like, how could you land a thing with 2 4-second lag, if you count, like, get information back from the position, send an instruction there? 4-second lag, and you think you can land a lunar guy? I don't think there's an actual pilot, right? They've already pre-programmed. Okay, the moon will be in this position. Just try to land. Watch out for rocks. That's crazy. There's got to be a lot of stuff that goes into that. Obviously. Speaking of stuff in the sky, we love when there's balloon news. Hobbyist balloon detected over western U.S. has left American airspace, officials say. This was actually real news. A balloon was intercepted by fighter aircraft over Utah on Friday and was likely a hobby balloon. What does that even mean? Like Hobby Lobby? Like you just get a balloon and fill it with air and let it go? Has left American airspace, the North American Aerospace Defense Command Center said Saturday. The small balloon was allowed to continue to fly above the U.S. after being intercepted Friday morning at an altitude of 43,000 feet. Had been determined not to pose a national security threat. Oh my goodness. After yesterday's fighter intercepts in coordination with the FAA, the NAADC monitored the likely hobby balloon via ground radars until it left U.S. space overnight. Okay, I have to Google this. What is a hobby balloon? Balloon. High altitude balloons are usually uncrewed balloons, typically filled with helium, released into the stratosphere, blah, 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 like weather balloons. Okay. So you're allowed to just launch those up, and then the FAA or NORAD intercepts them and goes, oh, it was nothing. Wouldn't you be curious as to who it was? The U.S. official described the balloon as being 50 feet tall, carrying a payload that is the size of a 2-foot cube. It is not known what the payload might be carrying. The balloon was intercepted by NORAD over Utah. It was not maneuverable, did not present any threat to national security, and posed no hazard to flight safety. So whoever released the balloon, are they tracking it? And then when it lands, they drive their truck out to the desert and find it? Or do they just get the information back through 3G? Or what the heck's going on? I want to know who launched the balloon. Is there a child in the 2-foot cube? Is it Falcon taking another ride? You never know. All right, here's a story about... We are flying through stories today. Here's a story. Cops infiltrate and bust a California sideshow and seize nearly 90 cars. Officers detained over 150 people at the event and say some individuals might have their cars destroyed. I didn't know what this was, so I put it in the show notes. In a decisive crackdown, and it seemed dramatic because anything that involves 90 cars, that's got to be a big deal. 90 car pileup, for example, that would be a really big crash. So anything with 90 cars. In a decisive crackdown on illegal street racing, authorities in San Joaquin County. I don't know how to say that word. Swiftly moved to halt a sideshow this past weekend, resulting in the detention of over 150 individuals and nearly 90 cars. I have seen organized 5Ks of less people than this. This is an illegal street race that is super organized enough to have 150 people come out. Police infiltrated a local group planning the sideshow event and prepared an appropriate response. When the event began, officers swooped in, contained the group, and started handing out tickets and towing vehicles. Sideshows are a major issue for California, along with various other states. Despite several tactics to reduce or eliminate the problem, none has been especially effective. Wow, brute force might end up being the only way to handle these reckless crowds, as San Joaquin County Police may have proven. The department says that it learned about a takeover planned for that day and then coordinated with a number of other departments to shut it down. Once authorities confirmed illegal activity at the intersection of these two streets, they moved in and contained the attendees. In total, they detained, identified, processed, and released over 150 people. Okay, we got to look at this video. So what happened? I thought that this only happened in GTA, where you were like driving along and you were like, oh, a street race. Okay, I'll join it. I don't have a very good car, but I'll just join it. And then you just race in the game. But in real life, how are these people doing this? They take their personal vehicles and like block off a street and go, no, 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 no. They get high-vis vests for like $2 at a yard sale and go, actually, this street is closed. Everyone go around. We're having a little race here, but it's definitely legal. It's definitely allowed.
The viewer video we got today shows San Joaquin County Sheriff's deputies out in numbers blocking this intersection and putting people in handcuffs. The sheriff says they're firm on this new tough stance against sideshows, but the charges have not yet come down from the district attorney. Stockton residents standing by their sheriff Tuesday after the San Joaquin County Sideshow Task Force detained, identified, processed, and released over 150
so
people
cars
and towed 88 vehicles Friday night.
It was just amazing to me how the police department gathered all these people up and arrested them and took all their cars.
A sideshow and a street takeover in the Los Angeles area is an informal and often illegal demonstration of automotive stunts. You clicked the wrong link. Automotive stunts now held in vacant lots, public intersections. Originally seen in the East Bay region of San Francisco, sideshows first appeared in Oakland, California in the 1980s as informal social gatherings of Bay Area youth. Oh, it's a California-specific thing. Common activities at sideshows include donuts and ghost riding. Oh, at first I was like, oh, they have donut stands set up and everything? Wow. No, I mean, they like spin their cars around. The latter involves driving a car, opening the door, and climbing out onto the hood. Is that real? I thought that was just a meme, like eating Tide Pods, people ghost riding. To crack down on illegal sideshows, the Oakland Police Department opened a police substation in Eastmont Mall and set up a no-cruising zone along International Boulevard in efforts to keep the events from spreading. An additional Can you imagine being so organized and wanting to race your car so bad that you could get this many people to do... Like, imagine if we focused on other stuff. I guess people do focus on other stuff, right? There's a lot of organized things in the world. I'd be so nervous to go into this. I'm like, you're not supposed to be doing this, right? But there's 150 people doing it. Like, how obvious? Like, if the cop was just like, oh, wait, they can't be doing that. But I guess what's one cop going to do? That's why they have to have an organized cop response. Because if one cop is going to come up and be like, excuse me, actually, you're all under arrest. They're all going to be like, no, we're not. Let's see what this guy has to say.
They don't do that in Oakland.
Stefan Joseph lives near the intersection of Country Club Boulevard and Pershing Avenue, where sheriff's deputies surrounded the sideshow. He says it was like nothing he's seen before.
This place was full of cars. There was cars all up and down my street, all over there, all in that parking lot, And they arrested everybody. And then they had the tow trucks waiting. And it, as far as the eye can see, you've seen these yellow tow truck lights.
On Monday, San Joaquin County Sheriff Patrick Withrow posted this video on Instagram, speaking directly to those involved in Friday's sideshow who have been calling the county to get their cars back.
So I just wanted to put something out to those people whose vehicles we have in our possession, and they can stop calling. Those vehicles will be held until their court cases have been settled through the district attorney's office. So they will not be released anytime soon.
Oh my goodness.
Unless the DA has settled your case. No need to keep calling. Your cars will stay with us. Therefore, they can't be used in any more public nuisance or sideshows until the district attorney has adjudicated your case. And then we'll determine whether your car is a public nuisance and whether it'll be destroyed or not.
What?
We reached out to District Attorney Ron Freitas for
They're just going to crush the cars? Like, actually, yeah, you were caught street racing, so we're just going to crush it. Destroy it? Couldn't they just sell it, right? Pocket some money if they're going to be a real gang.
comment. His office said he will comment after charging occurs, and he says Wednesday there will be a meeting about whether or not charges will be filed in this massive sideshow bust. Meanwhile, Stockton residents are grateful to have someone looking after their neighborhood.
I appreciate that. I mean,
wouldn't that be crazy if they didn't do any charges? Everyone got arrested, and then the district attorney is like, no, actually, release all the cars. Man caught in the massive Stockton sideshow bus says he was wrongfully arrested at gunpoint. Ooh, this is going to be cool. It was about 10 p.m. on February 3rd when 25-year-old Merced resident Isaac Cervantes, who was only in town for the night, said he left his hotel to fill up his gas tank before work. He said he works as a mechanic for a nonprofit organization, blah, blah, blah. He was in his work uniform. He was headed to the gas station located 7 minutes from the hotel. I had to be at work at 5 a.m. I was prioritizing everything, so I decided to get gas the night before so I have more time in the morning. After leaving the station, he says he was stopped by the sight of smoke coming from the nearby intersection. I thought there was an accident and that something was on fire because of all the smoke. I thought maybe someone needed help. As a mechanic, it's in my nature to help people in need. If I see someone with a flat tire or a car overheating, I'm going to stop and see if I can help. I never really heard of sideshows. I saw some stuff online, but I didn't know that people had them in the middle of streets and neighborhoods, he says. Oh, he's me. Good. He said as he got closer to the sideshow scene, he realized there was no fire and that something else was going on. It was a sideshow. He said he attempted to drive away from the area, but it was too late. Before he could leave, he said he was stopped in the middle of an intersection by flashing lights. The sheriff's department deputies had their guns drawn and pointed at him. They ordered me to stop and get out of the vehicle. They had their guns at me and their dogs barking. I remained calm and followed their instructions. I assured myself that I'd show them my work stuff, my hotel information, and my work email that showed I was only there on business and then everything would be okay. But that's not what happened. They would look at the information on his phone or direct him to the sheriff in charge of the they would not look at the information on his phone or direct him to the sheriff in charge of the operation. They wouldn't hear me out. They put me in handcuffs for 2 hours and took my work truck. Everything was so unorganized and chaotic, nothing was investigated properly. He said he was not aware that sideshows were an issue in that area. He's not a local. After learning about the problem, he said it's good that law enforcement is trying to crack down on them, but there needs to be due diligence.
Sheriff now saying that he's waiting on a local judge to sign off on those 88 search warrants for each one of these vehicles so that deputies can search them. If deputies find anything illegal inside of those cars, it could result in additional charges. Now, what? Of course, this all stems from the sideshow we told you about yesterday when the San Joaquin County Sideshow Task
Force. I thought that this video would have information on the guy who says he was arrested falsely. I thought you couldn't even do that, though. Like, if you have a search warrant, can you be like, I would like to search for everything illegal? Cervantes said that besides being a mechanic, he's also a college student. Since the incident, he's had to find alternative transportation to work and school and has not been given access to his tools, books, and laptop that were in his work vehicle. They looked at me in my mechanic's uniform and accused me of making repairs to the cars in the show. They judged me because of how I looked and took my livelihood. Would it have been different if I were in a suit and tie? No, sir, you are making illegal notary things here. You're a notary for the sideshow, so we're arresting you. That's if he was in a suit and tie. He said he told his boss, who picked him up from the scene, that he had no desire to accept future work in this city because of how he was treated by law enforcement. I really don't want to go down this legal rabbit hole. I just want the sheriff's office to apologize and give me my stuff back. Oh, my goodness. What a mess. Now we're on the side of the sideshowers. It was crazy. It's a news story this week, although it happened a while ago because the plea happened this week. A Cleveland woman pleaded guilty Thursday to aggravated murder of a toddler after she left it home alone for more than a week while she went on vacation. What? Crystal Candelario. She's 32. She left her 16-month-year-old daughter alone and unattended in her home on June 6, 2023. And she didn't return home until June 16th, 2020, so 10 days. When she returned, she found Jalen unresponsive and then called police. What? Police found Jalen in a filthy playpen. The girl was pronounced dead. Officials said she had been extremely dehydrated. Investigators determined that the woman left her daughter alone while she vacationed in Detroit and Puerto Rico. I don't get it. There's not much information. This case is one of those truly unimaginable cases that will stick with me for many years to come. Police said in a statement, it is our job to represent the victims, and today we spoke on behalf of 16-month-old Jalen, who is no longer with us, due to the selfish decisions her mother made. So you're at home, you're feeding your kid breakfast, and you're like, okay, well, I gotta go catch a flight on vacation, so see ya, kid. Or did she, like, just forget that the kid exists? I don't understand. Does she think the kid doesn't exist when she's not at home? Like, it's a Neopet? It just pauses? All right, I'm gonna come home. You take care of yourself. She gets home, the kid's dead, right? And then she's like, oh, better call police. I don't get it. None of this makes sense. There has to be something missing. Did she schedule a babysitter, like, on an app where you can schedule a pet sitter? Like, oh, hey, I'm gonna be out of town and please take care of my baby. And then didn't confirm that the babysitter was going to come, and the babysitter never came, because none of this makes any sense. All right. So, Super Bowl happened. Kansas City Chiefs win the Super Bowl, right? And then we've got the Kansas City Chiefs celebration parade. Every time a team wins a Super Bowl, they go back to their hometown and have a little parade. As we're having the parade, breaking news! The Kansas City shooting! On February 14th, 2024, 33 people were wounded in a mass shooting on the west side of Union Station in Kansas City, Missouri. One person was killed, 22 were shot, including 11 children. My goodness. The shooting followed the Super Bowl victory parade for the Kansas City Chiefs. Two adults, two juveniles, were charged in the connection with the shooting, with the adults being charged with murder. On February 11th, 2024, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. On February 14th, a victory parade and the rally were held. I don't know why I need to read stuff that just repeats information we already know. According to a reporter, loud pops could be heard as the confetti began to fall, and the Kansas City Chiefs and staff were inside Union Station. Witnesses claimed they heard an altercation before the shooting, with one reporting hearing a woman telling someone else, "Not now! This isn't the place!" No, it's not worth it. Don't do it. One of the suspected shooters was chased and tackled by attendees. Some of the Chiefs players sheltered in place with other attendees, such as Trey Smith and James Winchester, in a small closet, helped maintain calm until evacuation. Another attendee who sheltered inside Union Station recalled being told by a security guard to hop the fence due to the shooter, and witnessed head coach Andy Reid and other players calming down panicked children. My goodness. Chiefs players and their families who had attended the parade were escorted from the area and taken back to Arrowhead Stadium shortly after the shooting. So I guess the parade doesn't continue after that. It's like, oh, okay, everyone calm down. The shooting has occurred. Yes, yes, yes. Some people are bleeding. But still, we won the Super Bowl. Come on. Keep going down the parade. Now, I guess that doesn't happen. Well, we already have some of the police documents from this. So, at first, it wasn't clear, like, what had caused the shooting. Did someone come to the parade to shoot? Apparently, now we know that would be really easy. There's apparently not very much security for firearms, because the two people were able to get in there and start shooting at each other. But it seems like it was just an altercation. But then again, how do 22 people, like, after you've shot at your opposition, right, like two or three times, bang bang bang, and then you missed two or three times, wouldn't you be like, oh, maybe I should stop shooting, I'm really not good at this? But you shoot at least 22 times, well, at least 11, I suppose, because each person shot 11 times. Who knows? On February 14th, 2024, officers with Kansas City Missouri Police Department were working at the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl Parade. Officers responded to sounds of shots near these roads. 25 victims suffering from apparent gunshot wounds were either located at the scene or the area hospitals. A 43-year-old female who was among the victims succumbed to her injuries, and her death has been ruled homicide. An individual later identified as Lyndall Mays was located suffering from apparent gunshot trauma just to the north of West Perishing Road. A pistol was located next to him, as well as spent shell casings. Lyndall Mays was transported to an area hospital for treatment. Witness 9 was present at the time of the shooting. She responded to police headquarters to give a statement. She stated herself and Lyndall Mays were at Kessler Road and Perishing Road. She stated that a group of four males approached Lyndall Mays. One of the males asked him what he was looking at because they didn't know him. What? Oh my goodness, I do not want to go to Kansas City. You can't look at anyone. He asked, what you looking at? Where are you from? Do you bang? What you looking at? That's what he said. Lyndall Mays told Witness 9 he did not know who the individual in the group were. Witness 9 stated one of the individuals had a backpack with a firearm hanging out of it. According to Witness 9, the two individuals pulled out firearms from their backpacks and kept going, what you looking at? What you looking at? I made that part up. They pulled out firearms from their backpacks. Witness 9 tried to pull Lyndall Mays away so they could leave. As she turned her back, she heard gunshots. When she turned back around, she saw the group shooting at Lyndall Mays. She clarified and stated the incident happened fast, and she only saw the individuals with their firearms out, but she could not see who was shooting. After the individuals started shooting at Lyndall Mays, Lyndall Mays pulled out his own pistol and returned fire. Witness 9 started to run away, and then when she looked back at Lyndall, she observed him fall to the ground. She ran to Lyndall Mays and observed him suffering from apparent gunshot trauma. A still photo from surveillance video at the scene showed that was shown to Witness 9. Witness 9 identified Mays by circling him on the photo and writing, Lyndall. Okay. Detectives interviewed Witness 9's boyfriend, who is Witness 13. He stated a group of individuals approached Lyndall Mays and Witness 9, and they began arguing about why they were staring at each other. What? This is the argument? One of the individuals had a backpack, and he could see a firearm inside of it. Okay, so Witness 13's witness account corroborates Witness 9's witness account of the firearm hanging out of the backpack. However, let's see. Witness 13 stated at no time did the individual touch the firearm or make any threatening statements, other than what you're looking at, I guess. Witness 13 also stated none of the individuals in the approaching group made threatening statements to him, Witness 9, or Lyndall Mays. Detectives reviewed surveillance video and observed Lyndall Mays and Witness 9 standing near the West Perishing Road and Kessler Road intersection just to the north. It appears Lyndall Mays gets into a verbal confrontation with a group of individuals standing several feet from them. Lyndall Mays starts to approach the individual in an aggressive manner, at which time Witness 9 puts her hand on Lyndall Mays in an attempt to stop him from advancing further. It appears Witness 9 and Lyndall Mays continue to verbally argue with the individuals in the group. Lyndall Mays backs up and appears to continue yelling at the individuals in the group, pointing his finger at them in an angry manner. Lyndall Mays, by the way, this guy's name is in bold every time it's mentioned in this document. So that's why I feel like I need to give it emphasis. Okay. All right. We're almost through. We can do this. Lyndall Mays circles behind a person and pulls out a handgun with his right hand and points at one of the individuals later identified as a black box. It's redacted. At this time, none of the other individuals appear to have produced a firearm. As Lyndall Mays is chasing Black Box while pointing his gun at him, the other individuals in the group pull out their firearms and point them in the direction of Lyndall Mays and appear to start shooting in his direction. Black Box, whom Lyndall Mays is pointing his gun at, is seen running away from Lyndall Mays and appears to be unarmed. Lyndall Mays continues to chase Black Box as he is running away from him. Wow, this is way different. This is way different than what Witness 9 said. Witness 9 said there was an argument, she turned around, next thing she knows, Lyndall Mays is shot. But this surveillance video piece is way longer. I'm losing track of who's running after who. Lyndall Mays appears to be shooting at Black Box. Lyndall Mays then appears to get struck by gunfire and falls to the ground. The individuals involved flee the area. Witness 9 runs up to Lyndall Mays and immediately strikes him with her fist in an angry manner two times. Imagine. You just got shot. You're just shooting, and you just got shot. And you're like, oh, I'm down. And then some lady runs up to you. Well, it's not some lady. She knows him, right? And then punches him. I'm already shot. Talk about punching you when you're shot. Witness 9 runs up to Lyndall Mays and strikes him with her fist in an angry manner two times. Just to the north of Lyndall Mays, the deceased victim is observed lying on the ground suffering from apparent gunshot trauma. Black Box was transported to an area hospital with apparent gunshot trauma behind his left ear and left ankle. Oh my goodness, how can you have gunshot trauma behind your left ear and be alive? I guess it could graze you. Oh my goodness. All right. On February 16th, 2024, this is 2 days later, detectives interviewed Lyndall Mays at the hospital. Lyndall Mays was read his Miranda rights, blah, 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 blah. Lyndall gave a statement of what occurred and that was consistent with surveillance video at the scene. When Lyndall Mays was confronted that he had surveillance video of the incident, he then changed it. Hang on. Wait, let's go back. Sorry, I misread this. Lyndall gave a statement that was inconsistent with surveillance video. And then he was confronted that there was surveillance video. He changed his story. This happens a lot in these interviews. When you're getting interviewed by a cop, they'll go, we don't suspect you of anything. You've done nothing wrong. Stuff got out of hand. I know, things happen. Like, every day stuff, you know, it can happen to anyone. Like, you slip, a gun goes off, you shoot someone in the left ear, there's a black box running around. Who knows what could happen? But we don't suspect you of anything. We're just here to find out what happened so that we can set you free. Oh, yeah, you're right. I slipped and I shot a guy in the left ear. Actually, we have video evidence that that's not the case, and now you're under double arrest for lying to us. It's always a trick if the cops say anything. All right, Lyndall Mays identified himself, witness 9. Okay, we are on. Okay, we're almost one page away from finishing this. No, we're less than a page away. We can do it. Oh. Lyndall Mays identified himself, witness 9, and the others involved by circling them in a still shot taken from surveillance video. He acknowledged that he pulled out his gun first and began firing his gun at the others. Lyndall Mays was shown a still photo from surveillance video of him pointing a gun at one of the individuals. When asked what the individual was doing, who he was pointing the gun at, Lyndall Mays stated the individual was running away. Lyndall Mays stated he hesitated shooting because he knew there were kids there. Lyndall Mays stated that all he could have had gun. Wait, Lyndall Mays stated that they all could have had guns, so he just randomly picked one of the individuals to target because he was in fear of Witness 9's life? Lyndall Mays confirmed that he drew a gun first in a crowd of people with kids, picked one of the individuals in the group at random, and started shooting, all because they said, I'm going to get you. And to him, that meant, I'm going to kill you. Lyndall Mays stated the other individuals started shooting only after Lyndall Mays shot first. So we have another police document about this that I chose just not to read because Lyndall Mays is the one who shot first. And you always want to read the police document of the man who shot first. Lyndall Mays initially stated that he didn't think he shot his gun. Huh? How could you? Okay, I've only shot a gun like two times. Unless you count track pistols. Could you shoot your gun and not be sure that you shot your gun? Lyndall Mays initially stated he didn't think he shot his gun. When Lyndall Mays was advised he did shoot, he replied that he didn't hit anything though, but he knew it was still bad. Lyndall Mays then stated he only shot one time. He then said maybe two times. Oh, yeah, officer, I've had one drink, maybe two drinks, maybe six drinks, maybe eight. Maybe eight shots, I don't know. When asked why Lyndall Mays... There's also evidence of how much you shoot, right? You just look at how many bullets are left. Although, I don't know, maybe everyone doesn't go out with a fully loaded gun. When asked why Lyndall Mays advanced on them to begin with, he replied, stupid man, just pulled a gun out and started shooting. I shouldn't have done that. Just being stupid. When reminded that the person Lindell Mays was shooting at was running away from him, Lindell Mays said, "I know." Lindell Mays confirmed he shot first and shot two times. Lindell Mays acknowledged he shouldn't have pulled a gun out. This incident occurred in the middle of a very large crowd of people that were there celebrating the Super Bowl victory. At this time, there have been 25 victims injured by gunfire resulting from this incident, with one being fatally shot. Detectives observed multiple 9mm and .40 caliber spent shell casings near this intersection. A Glock 9mm handgun, black square or something, was observed on the ground. Do they want to redact the type of gun? Or wait, what? Was observed on the ground in apparent blood where Lindell Mays fell on the ground after being shot. The magazine contained six live 9mm rounds in a 15-round capacity magazine. That means he shot nine of them. There was a live round in the chamber. A computer check revealed the firearm to be stolen out of Kansas City, Missouri. Right at the end of the story, there's a twist also. Oh, and by the way, the gun was completely stolen. So that, my friends, News with Nick listeners, is the story of Lindell Mays and the black box. Now, there's no information that I know of, and I'm sure there is information somewhere. It's like what bullet hit what person, right? But it's probably takes a really long time to, like, imagine you're in a shooting. Bing, bang, 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 bang. Like, someone has to go back through and put those little yellow cards down on the ground with, like, the laser point. And, like, okay, the shot came from here, and then it went through this person. And with 25 people shot from multiple different people who were shooting, that's crazy. Now, it sounds like Lindell Mays started shooting, and then other people shot back in apparent self-defense. But then can you be charged with murder? Like, I'm getting shot at. Okay, sorry that I missed and hit a bunch of other people, but, like, I'm really scared and I'm getting shot at. I accidentally killed other people. I guess you can just be charged with murder for that, too. Or are they charged with murder for saying, "What you looking at?" Oh, man. A Willow Springs man staged a farm accident and paid someone to cut off his feet, authorities say. A man appeared to try and cash on an insurance policy by staging a bloody farm equipment accident, and it became the strangest case of this detective's career. Would-be fraud and gruesome scenes are part and parcel of Thompson's job, but the combination of those circumstances is odd. The details made it odder. In November, the Howell County Sheriff's Department, this is from, I don't even know. In November, the Howell County Sheriff's Office sent out a relatively vague press release to local media about a situation involving a man in Willow Springs who had lost his feet in an apparent staged incident with a brush hog, a rotary mower often attached to a tractor. Lost was the literal term, as the severed feet could not be found by responding medics and law enforcement officers. The case was recently closed, and Thompson shared details with the news leader on Wednesday about the event that piqued much of the South Central Missouri County's curiosity. "What a poorly executed plan," he said. "I've never seen anything quite like it." A call came in to emergency responders. It was described involving a man whose feet were severed while brush hogging, but Thompson, the detective, said it was quickly apparent the incident was staged. The feet were freshly severed. That much was true. Said Thompson, who said the man was in his 60s and a known paraplegic in his lower extremities. Okay, so he... All right. This is way different than, like, cutting off your working legs. You've already got two, like, dead weight legs. So I feel way less bad for this guy. He was in his 60s, a known paraplegic in his lower extremities. Authorities were immediately curious about the tourniquets on his legs and who put them there in the immediate aftermath of the alleged incident. The man, whose name is not being released because he's not criminally charged, had some help, apparently. Thompson said that the man from Florida made the trip to a small Ozarks town to cut off... Thompson said that a man from Florida made the trip to the small Ozarks town to cut off the man's legs with a hatchet, executing an alleged plan to commit insurance fraud. The wounds were not very convincing, the lieutenant said. The cuts were much too clean to have been done by a brush hog. If it was done by a brush hog, it would have been a bloody, gory mess. I've seen these types of accidents before, and it wasn't like that. All right, I need to look up what a brush hog is in Google Images. Okay, it's like a big... Oh, it's a lawnmower. Single spindle rotary cutters. Well, actually, this Google calls them bush hogs. Oh, no, wait. Cornell Small Farms from Cornell University. Brush hogs and rotary cutters, multi-purpose tools for the small farm. This 10-foot brush hog, it's just a large lawnmower, is it not? Okay. Man, I can't imagine how you'd cut your legs off, though. You're like taking a break. You're like, I'm just going to have a nice lemonade. And then the thing rolls down onto your legs. If this was done by a brush hog, it would have been a bloody, gory mess. The investigation continued. Investigators determined that the man was attempting to get money from an insurance claim since he never formally filed the false claim. Howell County prosecutors didn't press charges. Annoyed by the resources it wasted on the situation, the sheriff's office considered pursuing criminal charges, but the man was so severely injured from the incident, it would have been an arduous process to have him in jail. He already had a lengthy stay at the hospital. A couple days after, we got a call from a relative that found his feet in a bucket obscured by tires, so we went and got them. Okay. Why? So if you're going to do... So you call a guy from Florida. Hey, I need someone who's willing to cut my legs off. All I know is that you guys in Florida will do this sort of stuff. Okay, come on up. Cut my legs off. Right? He gets his legs cut off. He's like, my legs. Okay, call the police. Say that I cut my legs off on a lawnmower and I now need insurance. But he never filed it. So I wonder if the police were like, I don't think so. I guess you would need a convincing police report, right, to file insurance. You couldn't just tell the insurance company this is what happened. Normally they're like, okay, give us the police report. Like, okay, the police say that my legs got cut off in the brush hog. Now, why wouldn't you just run your legs over? Like, you're already getting them chopped off, but maybe it's just too scary. I know the one time I hit my leg with a weed whacker on somewhat purpose, it hurt way more than I expected. Like, it's that little string that spins around really fast and cuts grass. It's like, wow, how bad would that hurt if I just hit my leg with it? So I hit my leg with it. Really, there was a bug on my leg, but I was like, well, I gotta get this bug off my leg, so I'll just hit it with the weed whacker. That hurt way worse than I expected. So I guess you can't really expect how bad the brush hog is going to be. And also, there's probably no going back. Like, once the brush hog is running over your legs, you can't be like, no. But if the Florida guy is, like, starting to chop your leg off, and you're like, no, actually, cancel. You can still back out. All right, we got a couple gross stories to get to, and then we will wrap up for the day. We love ending on kidnapping news and stuff. Man accused of exposing himself and attempting to kidnap an 11-year-old told police he was just urinating.
Kidnapping last week. We showed you the video on the right of a man pulling up in a black car accused of trying to lure an 11-year-old girl. Metro's arrest report says officers were called about a man exposing himself to the child as she was walking home from school. The girl's father told police she approached the car because she thought it was her uncle, but once she saw what the man was doing, she ran. She ended up at a home nearby and asked the couple who lived there for help. They then walked her home. Police identified the suspect as 31-year-old Irving Malagon by surveillance video. He was at a gas station nearby the area about an hour before the incident. Police arrested him, and they also got a search warrant for his car, where police found the clothes he wore during the incident and a toy firearm. Malagon is being charged with lewdness and attempting to lure a child. He is due in court tomorrow.
The girl's father told officers his daughter was approached by a black car she believed was her uncle's car. An unknown male got out of the car, told the girl to walk toward him. When she approached him, he exposed his genitals and began touching himself. Gross. The girl immediately ran away and fled to a nearby home. Police identified the man as 31-year-old Camorlina Malagon. Maligan ended up admitting to officers he did ask a girl if her father was doing construction on a nearby roof. He stated at no point did he do or say anything inappropriate to the girl, but later, upon being advised of video surveillance, claimed that he had to urinate on the street because he really had to go bad, and he apologized if she took it the wrong way. Again! Two times in one show! Oh, things happen, right? Yeah, sometimes you have to pull over and get out of your car and talk to a little girl. We get it. We don't think you did anything wrong. What happened? Oh, nothing. We have security footage. Okay, fine. I had to pay. Oh, boy. Claimed he had to urinate on the street because he really had to go bad and that he apologized if she took it the wrong way. A search warrant was obtained to search Maligan's vehicle for evidence of the clothing worn during the incident. Also search his bladder. See if it's empty or not. The sweater he was seen wearing in the surveillance footage, a cell phone with a battery removed, and no SIM card. Strange. I feel like if I got arrested and they were like, we found a cell phone with a battery removed. Like, oh, that's literally trash. I was about to throw that away. Well, we found a bunch of empty cans of seltzer. Very suspicious. They're all crushed and empty. And also an old, moldy container that appears that it had Subway in it 4 months ago. Very suspicious. No, that has nothing to do with the crime. Maligan was booked on charges related to lewdness and attempting to lure a child on Friday. Is it extra illegal on Fridays? They said that he was also being investigated for a similar incident that occurred a few days earlier. Someone else contacted authorities after seeing Maligan's mugshot. The second incident involved a black sedan and a man fitting his description. Oh, it's probably not him, but let's see what this other person did. In this case, the young victim managed to escape as well. Police say the victim was walking her dog when the suspect got out of his vehicle and began approaching her while undoing his belt and beginning to pull down his pants. She says he told him to look at him, but she refused instead and got away. Good. Oh, my goodness. This guy's crazy. Let's get him out of here and get him a tighter belt that he can't take off in public. You have to call your probation officer. Sir, I need to go to the bathroom for real this time. Can you please remotely unlock my belt? Final story. This one's a short one. There's not much information. I tried my best to get more information on this one because I feel like it needs it. And if you don't want to hear anything gross, do not listen. Man accused of casting pornography onto Summit County restaurant TV in front of kids. According to a press release, Summit County Sheriff's Office says a group including six children, ages 9 to 12, went to the restaurant around 9:30 p.m. I'm going to find this press release if I can, so then we can read that instead. I should have done this before the show. This is literally the entire press release. On Sunday, February 4th, at approximately 8:30 p.m., Summit County Sheriff's Office responded to a restaurant in the city of Green. Earlier that evening, three families went to the restaurant after a youth basketball tournament. The group included six children, ages 9 to 12. While at the restaurant, they noticed pornography on one of the televisions. The parents of the children contacted the police office. The sheriff's detectives were able to determine someone used their cell phone to cast the pornography onto the televisions of the restaurant. The person responsible was identified as Dylan Seibel, age 30, of Canton. And then on February 12th, 2024, this 8 days later, Summit County Sheriff's detectives arrested and charged Seibel with disseminating harmful matter to juveniles under the age of 13 and disseminating harmful matter to juveniles M1. Well, he's charged with F4, whatever that is, and M1. He was transported to the Summit County Jail. This is crazy. I need more information, and I'm so mad I can't get it. And I even tried to ask the guy. Okay, so one day you go to the restaurant, you're like, ha ha, this is so funny. Look, they didn't lock down their TV's Chromecast, right? Look, I can take my phone and I can just control the TV, right? Okay, that's very basic. It's like level one. and you can just control the TV and you can cast your phone on it. So this guy thinks he's funny. He's like, oh, I'm going to put porn up on the TV. I'm sure he didn't look around the room like this previous guy would have done and been like, oh, yeah, I can't wait for all these kids to see this. He probably just thought it was freaking funny, and he put it up on the TV. And then they call the police. Apparently that's illegal. I don't know. Like, did he do it or did the restaurant do it? The restaurant's the one that owned the TV. This guy is just playing something on his phone. This is going to be a funny case, right? And what if there were no kids in the restaurant? Then it's completely fine. It's completely legal because no eyeballs that were under the age of 18 happened to be looking at the TV. Anyway. So then how much detective work went into this that it took them 6 days, no, 8 days to arrest the guy, right? Did they look at like the connection history? Did they contact the cell phone carrier and be like, okay, we've got this MAC address connected to the Wi-Fi at this time, so it must have been this guy. Hey, cell phone company, who owns this phone? Okay, it's this guy. All right, we're going to go arrest him for broadcasting porn on the thingy through the Chromecast. Right? So many questions. And I can't figure anything out, and we need to figure it out. So I find the guy on Facebook, and I message him. No response, unfortunately. I said, hey, Dylan. Hi, I have a podcast, News with Nick. Did you do this, allegedly? And I send him to the link. I said, I assume you just used Chromecast or whatever and don't work for the restaurant, but how'd they figure out it was you? No response. He didn't even see the message. Sad. All right, guys, we have to figure this out. Maybe I'm just going to have to go to Ohio and report live from the courtroom. He's just going to plea out anyway. Oh, it was definitely me. Please don't put me in jail forever. All right, this has been News with Nick. Thanks for coming to a fun show. Head on over to the website, newswithnick.com, and I'll record again next time I record. I'll definitely do it. I need you.